It's been way too long, and I really miss you. Love you, buddy. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Top fives and deep dives. What's out of PTM? Top fives and deep dives. What's out of PTM? Top fives and deep dives. What's out of PTM? Top fives and deep dives. What's out of PTM?
My favorite director would have to be Martin Scorsese, followed by Quentin.
Welcome to Top Fives and Deep Dives. This is Justin over here in LA. We've got Mike over in London. What is up?
Yo.
We've come back together. We got a new app. It's been another minute. This is what we do now. This is what we do, right, Mike? We come in to just give the people a little treat every now and again.
Yeah. I don't know how we get so busy. It just keeps happening.
It just happens. You're over in Austria. I'm in Utah. We're always bouncing around now.
We are.
Things are happening. But a lot of shit's happened the last few months in the world, in life. And unfortunately, it is going to lead into what we're talking about today. Unfortunately, we lost someone that I at least, you know, consider such an icon in the entertainment world, Matthew Perry. I mean, one of the six friends. Rest in peace to him. You know, my wife, Alex, Friends is one of her favorite shows ever. I've watched, you know, every episode many times. It's become one of my, you know, comfort shows. I love it. Man, it's so weird that Chandler's just not walking the earth anymore, you know?
Yeah. What was it, like just before Christmas? It's hard to even remember now.
It was, I know, everything blend. It's so crazy how everything blends together these days. It was, when was it? It was actually weirdly right before Halloween. It was end of October.
What? Really? Oh my God.
Yeah, it does not feel that long ago. I'm with you. I thought it was like November, anyway. December.
Yeah, it's been a while since we recorded, but it's been.
It's crazy.
And it sucks too. Like, it's one of those, what unfortunately is like a classic story, right? He came out with his book and it was like, everyone felt like he was doing well. And then like this happens. Like, that unfortunately has happened to a lot of people where you feel like, yes, they're on the road to recovery or whatever. And then this fucking shit, you know?
Yep. It's so sad. And he seemed like a really like wonderful person in real life. So
yeah, I agree. Yeah.
It's a real shame. And, but yeah, rest in peace to him. But in his honor, Mike, I got to give it to you. You had a great idea. And today's episode, we're doing top five movies starring one of the six friends. So all of the, you know, we've got Courtney Cox, Jennifer Aniston, Lisa Kudrow, Matthew Perry, we've got Matt LeBlanc, and we've got David Schwimmer. They've all starred in different movies over the years, some not in too many, some in quite a lot. And Mike and I, we're gonna rank our top five. I think our only stipulation to each other was that you have to use at least four of the friends. So, yeah. You know, if you really feel strongly about a couple movies from one of them, you can do two for one friend, but otherwise you got to have a different friend for every single movie on the list. And it gets, you know, it's allowed us to check out some movies from all of these guys. And knowing you, Mike, I have a feeling, although you don't have to reveal it if you don't want, but I have a feeling you are going to have a different movie from each, like all your top five, I feel like.
Oh yeah. Five movies, yeah. Five friends.
Yeah. I know you.
So it's, you know, again, it's a best of the like top five movies with them, but also it's kind of the best or our favorite from each one in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Or almost there.
Yeah, dude, it was interesting going down this road because I feel like a few of them, I have seen quite a few movies with them.
Yeah.
Like Jennifer Aniston, for instance, I feel like I've seen quite a few movies of hers.
Yeah, you could easily do a top five Jennifer Aniston.
Totally.
Or Lisa Kudrow. And then the others are sort of, I'm not so sure about this.
Yeah, a little bit fewer further between. And it was really interesting, honestly, looking at the filmographies of a couple of them.
Yeah.
And I have to give a shout out. I have to admit, and if somehow it's on your list, you don't have to say anything right now, but I have to bring this up because I, of course, big Entourage fan, and I was a listener for years of Victory, the podcast, the Entourage podcast with Kevin Dillon, Kevin Connolly, and Doug Ellen. And one of the running jokes on the podcast, for anyone that doesn't listen to it, is Doug Ellen always brings up over, you know, the course of however many episodes, always somehow he comes back to the fact that he's got to talk about this movie he did way back in the day. It was kind of like the thing that broke him out and got him a little bit on the radar of Hollywood, you know, quite a bit before Entourage, David Schwimmer movie, Kissing a Fool. And I have wanted to watch it ever since the pod. I could not find it anywhere.
Yeah, so let's say that, you know, some of these friends, they don't have that many movies, but they have more than you think. And all of them are like movies you haven't heard of or have been forgotten or have not aged well. And very few of them are available.
Yeah.
Like I watched quite a few, but also I think this is a continuing project in my life to try to watch. Like I keep seeing movies with like one review on all of the internet that I'm like, I've got to see this. I've got to know.
How do I track this fucking movie
like,
down?
What's
yeah.
Joey doing in this movie? I need to know, you know? And David Schwimmer might be the most like, because he did those Madagascar movies, right?
Yeah.
But then like anything that's like every single movie he's ever been that's live action is like a movie no one's seen or remembered. Like he doesn't have any like secondary movies, really, if you ask
me. There's one movie, I won't bring it up yet. It's not on my list, but we'll talk about it in the honorables and at the end. There's one movie he's in that I was like, holy shit, I had no idea I did not remember he was in this, but I have very vivid memories of seeing this movie, I think, in the theater when I was younger.
So this is the other thing, though, also, is like Schwimmer and especially Lisa Kudrow are in a lot of movies where they're not the lead.
Yes.
And you're like, how do I deal with that? I don't know exactly. Yep. So it's been a time. This has been a fun project.
I agree. I mean, without further ado, I feel like we jump in and you want to hit us with your number five?
Sure. Yeah, I'll do that. All right. Number five. I want to talk about Courtney Cox.
Wow.
Now, Courtney Cox is also one where like, I think the movies that I like the most that she's in, she just doesn't play a big enough role for me to put it on here. And I'll explain what those are maybe in the honorables. But
okay, I love it.
Ultimately, it felt like we had to go with a Scream because that's where she plays clearly her biggest roles.
Yeah.
I went with 2000's Scream 3.
Oh my God, I love it. I love it.
Because I have to tell you, I know you already know this, but like, I'm not sure if we've talked about it or anytime recently on the pod.
Yep.
I'm just done with Scream. I'm just so screamed out, you know, like I've seen them so many times. And the last two movies, I felt like they're the exact same as like the other movies. And I just like, I keep seeing them and I'm like, I don't know if I like this anymore. Like, I just can't keep doing it, you know? And that's why it's at number five, as opposed to somewhere else on my list.
You have a little fatigue right now on the whole series.
I'm fatigued. And I don't want to say that they're bad, but like sometimes you just get movied. You just see a movie too many times.
Yeah. You know? I think they could have ended it perfectly with 4.
Yeah, agreed.
You and I both like 4 a lot. I know we've talked about this. We don't have to go all into it. I like 5 and 6, but I am with you in the sense of 4 was like, oh my God, like I'm so happy they did another one. That was fucking great. They really didn't need to do anymore.
Yeah. And I don't know. We'll see what happens. Because obviously there's
scandals,
controversy with the actors that are in the new Scream movie. Anyway. And I also have to say, like, I'm going off on a bit of a tangent. But, like, I strongly take into account how I felt about films, like, when I was younger, before I even knew better. Because I think it's important to kind of, like, try to remember how you originally saw a film. And this is why, because this can happen, right? When you see something like 10 times, 12 times, 100 times, you're like, it doesn't have the same effect. It's only the greatest movies like get you every single time, you know?
Very true.
So I try to avoid that when I can, but yeah, I'm a little bit screamed out. Why I chose Scream 3, I think I just really like the like Courtney Cox, like Parker Posey of it all, where they're like the same, you know, she's playing her, but she's also in the movie. And then there's like all the drama with David Arquette, which you don't really get in the other movies because they're like almost always like a couple or like an item. And then you get the David Arquette arc where he kind of wins her back, you know, at the end. This is like, I don't know. I feel like in this one, she's doing some solid, if not outrageous, like screaming. Like she's a little bit more of like a scream queen type character. Whereas like in the first one and even the second one a bit, she's like, I don't know, almost like too cool for school, you know? I don't know. I think this is where I'm going. I felt like it had to be Scream. We'll talk about some other movies that I like her in, but I felt like it had to be Scream. I went with 3.
I love it. I love it. It's a great place to start this list. And a place that, even though you are fatigued, a comfortable place for you and I that we, you know, have talked about many times. Because we do love this series, even if there's some fatigue.
Yeah, agreed.
Well, I'm going to take it over to our fallen friend and Monica's love interest, Chandler, in Matthew Perry. And at number 5, I am going for the absolutely ridiculous Almost Heroes.
Oh, wow. Okay. Right on.
So Chris Farley's last lead movie role came out after he passed away. Came out in 1998. He still, of course, had his supporting role in Dirty Work to come, but this is his last lead role. Him and Matthew Perry are the two leads. Again, Mike, you know what? You actually teed me up well, because it is a movie I had to remember how I felt when I first saw it when I was younger. And when I first saw this when I was younger, I thought this was one of the funniest goddamn movies that I had seen in a minute. And it's about Matthew Perry. Like, he essentially hires Chris Farley to help him race across like the Western frontier in the 1800s, hoping to beat Lewis and Clark to the Pacific Ocean. And it's an absolutely absurd plot. It's crazily enough directed by Christopher Guest, which is kind of insane.
It's when you crazy. Think of his other movies. And I think I like Christopher Guest movies a little bit more than you do.
You do. And it, with that said, our man Eugene Levy's in it, and it's just an absolutely, like, okay, I'm going to be honest. Like, I rewatched it, and it is like a very Farley movie in the sense of a lot of like physical humor and, you know, him using his tone and his yelling for hilarity. But it, and I am someone that famously kind of goes more for the clever lines and this and that more so than the physical. But I just, on the one hand, I was watching the movie and I was like, this is fucking ridiculous. Like, this is silly. But then on the other hand, I was remembering the joy when I was younger. And I feel like it gave me a soft spot. I was just like, no, this is fucking, I mean, it's just a good time. It's so dumb, but it's also funny. There is some like smart stuff in there from Christopher Guest, but it's just, look, if you like Farley and you've never seen it, I just don't see why you're not gonna like it. It got ravaged by critics. 5% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow, I didn't know that. 5%. Yeah, wow.
Ravaged. But the audience likes it quite a bit more. So look, it's silly. I think if you've never seen it and you like Chris Farley's antics to a degree. I know I'm talking about Farley a lot more than Matthew Perry, but that's because I feel like Matthew Perry, he plays his role well. It's definitely like if Chandler was someone that came from money and that was having this band of misfits take him around and he's kind of the fish out of water, and he's great. But it's, of course, the combo of him and Chris Farley and Farley's ridiculousness that kind of drive the movie. So if you're into Farley, I think you check it out.
Okay. I just to back up some of the things you're saying. One, okay. Anything with Chris Farley in it is the Chris Farley thing. Like yes. Anytime he's on SNL, like any movie he's in, it's impossible to stand up to Chris Farley. Two, can confirm Matthew Perry is Chandler in every single movie he's ever in. There's just no denying. He just plays Chandler. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I'm just saying he always plays Chandler. And three, Matthew Perry is great at playing off people, right? Like he's...
Yep.
I don't know that he ever really fully worked as like a standalone leading man. He just plays off people really well, which is what makes him so charming and like everything that he does.
Yes.
So
he needs that.
Yeah. Is this the greatest movie? No. I mean, it's been a little while since I've seen it, but like it's fun. I just think it's really fun that there's a Christopher Guest movie. There's a vehicle with Matthew Perry and Chris Farley, which is like one of the most outrageous combinations like that you wouldn't believe was in a movie
ever.
And Bo Woodbine is in this movie, who's also in what's the name of that Courtney Cox movie I was going to talk about? The Runner. I don't know if anyone ever saw The Runner, but he's in that movie with Courtney Cox.
Wait, no, I have not. I didn't.
It's like a mafia thing. It's not bad. It's yeah. It's like where she's like a real star. Like she's really in the leading role, which again, okay. She doesn't do in that many movies.
But dude, it's like when we were much younger, it's like I didn't even know when I was this young who Christopher Guest was. Christopher Guest doing this movie is actually insane when you kind of think about it.
Yeah, and Christopher Guest is like, if I had to pick one person that was the totally opposite sense of humor as Christopher Guest, it would be Chris Farley. Like, they're so opposite in like what they do. It's just, yeah. And, I'll tell you what, what's coming up for my Perry choice is also something in this way, which is like, I don't know how good of a film it is, but like, it's fun that it exists and it's just fun to watch like because of all the circumstances and the actors involved.
Okay, I love that. And by the way, I just want to say this in case anyone's who the fuck's Christopher Guest? Christopher Guest, he's directed Best in Show, A Mighty Wind, Waiting for Guffman.
Yeah, and he was part of like the the Spinal Tap like
crew. Yes. Yeah. Yes. If that gives you a sense of kind of his typical brand of humor. Him doing this movie is, in a way, feels off-brand. But yeah, I had to sneak this into my list. It really was one of those movies that randomly every, like, 3 years I'll think about and be like, huh, how about that movie Almost Heroes no one ever fucking talks about?
Yeah,
and agreed. Yeah. Yeah, it's I wanted to get it out there. If you've never seen this, I know you've probably seen Farley's other kind of more famous movies. This one's worth a watch if you're into his style of humor.
Okay. I love it. For number four, I'm digging into the strange filmography of David Schwimmer. Oh.
Bless you.
And I don't know. I thought about like three different things here. And I'm still a little bit unsure, but I decided to go with 2006's Big Nothing. Did you ever see this movie?
You know what? I didn't. It was on my list to watch because I was so intrigued by the fact that it has both him and Simon Pegg.
Okay. Yeah.
Tell me about it.
So here's the thing. 43% Rotten Tomatoes, 61 audience. So I'm already intrigued, right? You're like, okay, the audience thinks that there's a little bit of a hidden gem here. You like that. The director is Jean-Baptiste Andrea. Who basically the only other thing that I know that he did was that film Dead End with Ray Wise, that horror film from 2003.
Yes.
And now I'm literally reading an article from November, like 3 months ago. He apparently now is an author and was just granted France's top literary prize for his latest novel. He's written four novels and apparently he's crushing it as an author. So good for you, sir.
Good for him.
Big Nothing. It's kind of a three-hander, really, with Simon Pegg as like not in any way like Simon Pegg, American accent, very different character than what he normally plays. Very funny. Schwimmer, who is like, this isn't his most out of character performance, let's say that. But like, he's almost not the worst part, but like the smallest. Not smallest in terms of screen time, but like Simon Pegg is playing a big character and the third person is Alice Eve, who's playing a big character.
Okay.
And if there is like a fourth supporting character, It's David Schwimmer's wife, who's a cop, played by Natasha McElhone from Californication.
Come on.
So
I love her.
You love the cast already, right?
Man. And Alice Eve, isn't she? She's been in quite a few movies. Wasn't she in Entourage?
Probably. She definitely could have been someone that, like,
yes, Adrienne Grenier
was fucking.
Yes, that is exactly who she is. She is that girl in, like, the final season that I think that he, spoiler alert, I think that he, like, ends up marrying at the very end.
Oh, I don't even remember that.
Yeah, it was, but anyway, the final season was not good. But anywho, she's in a bunch of shit. Sorry, tangent.
So, and this movie also, a lot of it was filmed on the Isle of Man and in Wales. So big shout out to the UK. This movie actually premiered at the Cardiff Film Festival, never released theatrically in North America. And basically it's like, it's not the most, I don't know, sort of original idea, but it's kind of like a group of characters. I almost said Ross. David Schwimmer ends up working at like a call center, and like Simon Pegg is his kind of like outlandish colleague. And then they have a get rich quick scheme, which involves like extortion, and then people end up dead. And it's kind of like the hapless, like people trying to commit a crime that like they're not actually criminals and they're not prepared, and they keep finding themselves in these like outrageous, like wacky situations. But it's pretty dark. Like there's a lot of people that are like dying, and like the whole premise of the thing is that they're trying to like extort a priest for like child pornography, which like even gets darker than that. So it's like, damn, the whole thing is dark, but it's also like kind of, you know, a wacky like comedy of errors type thing. Like people just not qualified to do a heist. And again, Simon Pegg is doing something pretty different from what he normally does. And I don't think he ever really picked up this type of character again, but it's still, yeah, it's interesting to see. And I kind of wish that he did, because he's probably the funniest part of the whole movie. So yeah, I don't know. Big Nothing. Pretty sure no one saw it. Again, never released theatrically in North America, but it's definitely worth a watch.
It sounds interesting. At the very least that. At the very least, it sounds interesting.
Yeah.
All right. So that leaves me, what, my number four?
Yeah.
Okay, number four. You know what? I chose a movie, actually, that I never saw when we were younger, Mike. I just saw it, I think it was this past summer, for the first time. One of Alex's favorites growing up. And we went to see it out here, out in LA, you know, for anyone that lives out here. They play, it's like a famous summer thing out here in this big cemetery in Hollywood called Hollywood Forever. They play movies outdoors in the cemetery. You're not like sitting on graves or anything, but there's a big, big open field. And then there's a mausoleum, and they project the movie on the side of the mausoleum. And it's really fucking cool. It's an awesome way to see a film. Usually they do a few horror films as we get closer towards Halloween. Anywho, saw this movie this past summer. Thought it was fucking great. Couldn't believe I'd never seen it. And it's got our girl Lisa Kudrow, Romeo and Michelle's High School Reunion.
No, I'm going to have to stop you there. I've got that higher.
Okay.
I'm so glad it's on your list. I'm so glad it's on your list.
Dude, I can't wait to discuss it later.
Absolute classic.
Please proceed with your list.
Fuck, okay.
It's been a while since we've had one.
It has.
But it sounds like, I did not expect that.
Did not expect that from your list. Interesting.
Wow.
Okay, my number three. I am going to assume, based on what's happened so far, this isn't on your list. And this is kind of the reverse situation, like a film that I definitely saw when I was younger. It came out on my 11th birthday, for what it's worth, or maybe my 10th birthday. I don't know, something like that. And I just kind of remembered it being all right. And then because it's very easily available, I decided to rewatch it. And I don't know. I thought it was really fun in a specific way. I am talking about 2000s. The Whole Nine Yards.
Oh yeah, this just missed my list.
Okay, so this is another one that 43% Rotten Tomatoes, 64% audience. So again, yep, there is a cult following out there. Jonathan Lynn director of My Cousin Vinny and Clue. So you know you're in pretty good hands. Mitchell Kapner, who wrote this, I think this might have been what he wrote after Romeo Must Die. So again, you know you're in good hands. I mean, the thing about this movie is I don't think I ever laughed one time over the course of 100 minutes, which you'd think is bad if you're watching a comedy. But then I realized that like I was just kind of smiling the whole time. Like, it's just really fun. So Matthew Perry plays like a dentist, and he's in this marriage to his wife, who's Rosanna Arquette, who just like absolutely hates him, like just hates his guts and is open about like hating his guts. And already you're like, what? Rosanna Arquette's in this movie? I'm kind of already sold. Then former slash current slash on the run, like mobster hitman Bruce Willis moves in next door. So now you've, and then they like, you know, there's like a Matthew Perry, like Bruce Willis, like friendship. So you've got like sort of, you know, the like beta nebbish, like Matthew Perry type guy. And you've got Bruce Willis being like this alpha, like assassin guy. And there's like a bit of, you know, that kind of, that type of dynamic exists in a lot of movies and it's pretty fun. Mm-hmm. And then you get like kind of the turn of the movie, which is Rosanna Arquette decides that Matthew Perry should go to Chicago and rat to like the former mob boss that Bruce Willis actually like testified against, that like secretly he's moved up here to Montreal and like you can come kill him. And like, maybe there's like, you know, some kind of fee involved with giving this information to the mob.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, I don't even want to say where it goes from there necessarily, but like you've got Natasha Henstridge, who like people don't remember, but is so good in like Species. And you're just like, what? Oh, and then God. Like you're with the mob.
Holy shit.
And you're like, who's like the main mob enforcer whose name is Frankie Figgs? Fantastic name. It's Michael Clark Duncan. It's Michael fucking Clark it's Duncan. Duncan. Yeah, Michael love that. Clark Duncan. Then Matthew Perry's like, what do you call the hygienist at his like dental practice is Amanda Peet, who I will not say exactly what happens, but she literally takes over the second half of the movie and becomes like the most important character and also is just naked for most of the time. And like, I don't know, there's just so many fun faces and there's just like something so like, it's so breezy. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so uncomplicated. It's just actors you love. It's not the greatest writing ever, but like Amanda Peet has this really fun arc and like, it's just, I don't know. It's just really fun. And I like that Bruce Willis has his whole guest spot on Friends where he's like dating Rachel. So I like that kind of tie back. I had a lot of fun with this, to be honest.
I could not agree more. I actually remember this was like a movie my parents loved when I was growing up. It's just,
this is such a like a dad movie for sure.
Yes. Yes. And it's like, there is part of me understands that maybe the critics didn't love it, but then part of me also is shocked that it's that low of a score. Like, this to me feels like a movie that about like 60-65% of the critics enjoy, you know. The audience likes it even more. And I guess that is kind of what happened. Just you shifted down a little bit in the Rotten Tomatoes of it all. But it's just so fun. Like, it's just, it's like you said, it's breezy. It's easy to watch. There's a lot of people in it. There's something so 2000 about it. And weirdly enough, with me saying that, I find that if a movie like this with this much star power came out right now, I feel like the critics would embrace it in a weird way.
Hmm. Yeah, maybe.
I do.
Maybe.
Well, let me tell you why. Because I think that in a way, the critics have eased up in the sense of we don't get as many movies like, we don't get as many movies that are not just blockbusters or Oscar type films. And I find that when something comes out that might be fun, has a lot of people in it, if you look back at kind of the critic reviews, they tend to generally be positive. I don't know if that's just because they want to drive people to the box office these days, but I don't know. I am with you is what I'm saying, that this movie is more fun than perhaps looking its score up on Rotten Tomatoes may lead you to believe.
No, we say this a lot, but like, the combination of factors in this movie, truly, truly, this is the movie that absolutely in no fashion gets made anymore.
No.
It's like mid-budget, $40 million, which is like a death sentence for any movie today.
Yep.
it's a rom-com with like kind of big stars, which you very rarely get. Shot on location in Montreal, which again, you very rarely get. Like, and just like a silly comedy. Like, this is not a thing that people make.
No.
They just don't.
They just don't do it.
Yeah. Also, legendary stories about partying with Bruce Willis and Matthew Perry, which I feel a little bit bad saying since Matthew Perry is now dead.
I know.
But like, this was a whole situation. And it does seem like one of those movies where people were just having fun on set. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And there's just such fun chemistry between Perry and Michael Clark Duncan and Bruce Willis and Michael Clark Duncan. And it's just like, I don't know. It's just a lot of fun. This really surprised me. I was like, I'll throw this on. And then I was like, wait, this actually is so much better than I thought.
It's such a pleasant surprise.
It really is. And again, it wasn't like, I wasn't like bowled over laughing. It was just like fun to watch.
Well, that's what's funny. That's what's interesting about it, right? Is it's not that. It's not like you're cracking up or anything. It's breezy. What you said, that word breezy, but in a positive way, is the best way to possibly describe it. It's just one of those movies you sit, it's on, you're having a good time.
And I should mention again, excessive nudity from Amanda Peet, which is another thing that's like the devil in movies, right? Like, I mean, everyone, you don't want to have any sex scenes, no nudity, and that's like where we are now.
And you know what? I'm sorry, but I'm just not mad about that.
No, I'm not either. Honestly, Amanda Peet's arc just makes the entire film. It is worth watching. You just have to trust me. It's fucking good.
Oh my God. Whole nine yards.
Full nine yards? Your number three. Yeah.
Oh, my number three. It's time to talk about my gal, Jenny. I love her.
Down here at number three. Okay.
I love her. She's my gal. Jennifer Aniston, she's one of my faves. I think she is. Brad really fucked up. Let me just say.
Can we say that she obviously has the best filmography, and also is the best actor on Friends? Just straight up.
Yes, we can.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many movies. Honestly, she has so many movies that even if I'm not going to go out there and shake my fist and tell everyone that they are literally amazing movies, she has so many movies that I really love and enjoy and that I just have so much fun watching.
Yeah, facts.
And so it might surprise you, Mike, the movie that I'm going to drop right now, but you know, there's one or two movies of hers that I love, but I feel like maybe she isn't quite as instrumental to the plot where I thought, oh, maybe we've talked about this before. Anyways, what I decided to go with, 2011's Just Go With It.
Yeah, sure. I mean,
have you seen it?
Oh, I've seen it. I've seen it. I can't even tell you how many times I've seen it. For some reason, it's on like all the time here.
Really?
And did we talk about it on a Nicole Kidman draft at all?
Maybe we have mentioned it at one point over the course of the pod, but
there's another like Sandler Aniston movie that you really don't care for, right? Am I remembering correctly?
I'm trying to think which one that is.
Murder Mystery?
I don't care for Murder Mystery. Okay. You are very right with that. Yeah,
okay. Anyway, sorry. Please go back with Just Go With It.
So Just Go With It. Here's speaking of breezy. I find this movie to be breezy in the best way. It's, again, we're kind of, if we're going to split Sandler's career into halves, this technically is in the portion that people would call the second half. And a lot of people kind of, you know, fell off with Sandler after his first 10 years, maybe 15 years or so, with the comedies. I think this one is one of a few that I, you know, probably famously on this podcast, that's my boy, but love a few of his later comedies. I think this one's so fucking fun. It's, if you don't know the plot, Sandler, he's a plastic surgeon. Jennifer Aniston's his assistant. He's always, you know, doing like, he's always trying to get girls essentially by like, he pretends he's married and he's kind of a fucking schmuck.
Wait. Trying to get girls. No, he pulls. They imply that he's pulling girls all the time.
Yes, so many. So he ends up meeting Brooklyn Decker and he wants to take it all the way with her. And, you know, he's fucking gaga over. He wants to be able to prove the lie about the fact, you know, that he does have his ex-wife. And so he asked Jennifer Aniston to pose as this, you know, wife that he's, I believe they're about to get divorced is the way he tells it. And it just spirals. They go to Hawaii. It spirals, of course, as these things do. And you can probably kind of guess a little bit where this is going to go. But it's just a classic fucking fun rom-com. Dave Matthews himself is a fucking steel scener in this movie.
Yeah.
He is outrageous. And he's in this movie as a supporting character. We've got Nicole Kidman. We've got, you know, the classic cast of characters show up. We've got Nick Swartzen. We've got Alan Covert, of course, makes an appearance.
Minka Kelly makes a quick appearance as well. You love
She
that.
Does. She does. And I don't know, man. The reason I think I chose this is because there's so many films of hers that I enjoy very much. But she feels... I mean, she does play either the lead or the co-lead in a lot of movies. But I don't know. This one, to me, I feel like goes underappreciated. I think she is such a big part of the movie, and she's great in it. And I love it. Give me some breezy. Give me some breezy Sandler and Aniston. Just not murder mystery.
Okay, so I'm not like the biggest fan of this movie, largely because it's almost 2 hours long, which is stupid, and the music is terrible. But like, she is obviously the best part.
Yes,
and I have to say that, like, you know, there's like an ongoing, like, I don't know if it's a discussion or just memes at this point that like Adam Sandler, he like always casts girls that you can't ever imagine being with Adam Sandler.
Yes, yes.
Brooklyn Decker is the most audacious cast I've ever seen in my life for someone to be with Adam Sandler. It's so absurd. It's like, dude, she's in Battleship. You can't pull that. Get out of here. No.
That is literally not humanly possible.
No. I mean, yeah. So while this isn't like one of my favorites, it does show a lot of things that are great about Jennifer Aniston, because she's keeping... I mean, if she's not in this movie, this thing is like a Jack and Jill level train wreck. Like, yeah. She keeps the entire fucking thing.
She keeps it afloat.
So kudos to her.
Kudos, Jenny. We love you. Yeah. We fucking love you. But that's number three for me. That's number three.
Well, I have to say I'm going to throw it right back to you, because my number two is the 1997 absolute cult classic, Romeo and Michelle's High School Reunion.
Wow.
Which I'm so jealous to hear that you watched in the open air cinema, which is just chef's kiss.
Chef's kiss. A lot of big fans. A lot of people dressed up.
Such a cult movie.
Yep. Really is. Bring us into it.
All right. Romeo and Michelle, 97. Directed by David Merkin, who also directed Heartbreakers. And this is it's like an adaptation of a stage show, right? Which Lisa Kudrow was in. And it is, I don't know. So Lisa Kudrow and Mira Sorvino are Romeo and Michelle. They are, I wrote this down, 28, living in LA, and they're just kind of like coasting by. They go to like the clubs at night. One of them has a job, which is like a dead end job. And they're just like, they love each other, but like, you know, they're kind of just by themselves. And then they find out that their 10-year high school reunion is happening. And honestly, for like the first half of the film, they don't really do much. There's like a lot that's told in like flashback, and they like try to, I don't know, get like better themselves in some way, because they're worried about like not appearing impressive at the reunion. And then like the second half kind of takes place at the reunion and centers around the fact that they try to claim that they invented Post-it notes. But like, yeah, I don't know. This is one of those films that's really hard to pinpoint, because it's not an indie film, but like it has an indie film kind of vibe. And it's like the humor in that sense is almost understated, but the performances are so over the top. Like, especially Mira Sorvino's like accent, which is
Oh my god!
Like the Californians sketch on SNL, but like taken like even further. Yep. And it's just, I don't know, it's really sweet, and it like, it never takes itself seriously. It doesn't really do a lot, like it doesn't accomplish a lot of ground. But like, you just, yeah, you just sort of like it the entire time you're watching it. It's just like a really, I don't know, just a charming movie.
Well, for how ridiculous it can be, there's something very genuine about it that comes off naturally. And I think that's where a lot of the charm comes from.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's, and I mean, just the whole cast kills in this.
Yeah. Who did we not mention? We didn't mention Jeanine Garofalo, who's, yep, like, again, because it's the 90s, she's in every film.
Did you mention Justin Theroux?
No, or Alan Cumming, who plays like a key role, sort of.
Of
like,
course, it, yeah. Alan Cumming is, I mean, it's just, it's really, really, I don't know, dude. When I was younger, I hate to say this, but it's like there were certain movies that were either like guy leaning or girl leaning. And this, to me, like, I saw, you know, you see the poster when you're 8, 9 years old, and it's also rated R at that point. But I mean, you want to see those movies, obviously. But you see that and you're just like, oh, maybe that's like, that one's for the ladies. And I couldn't have been more wrong. I can't believe I never got around to it. It's just wacky and fun. And yeah, like you said, charming. And you leave the movies feeling like you just had a really good time for an hour and a half. And what more do you want?
And I also feel like the opening scene is like almost something like that you should teach in film school, because it's so good at like setting the scene. Exactly. Like setting the tone of the movie, where they're watching, oh my God, Pretty Woman. And they're like,
yep,
they're like making fun of it, but they're like, I can't remember. They say watch it like 20 or 40 times. And they're like, right, this is ridiculous. But like, actually, like, and then they like actually love it. Like, it just lets you know that like, whatever, like, satire they're doing, like they're not taking themselves seriously at all, and it's fun. Yeah, it's really fun.
So fun. I'm so glad that you have that.
And Kudrow is just like, you know, the third or fourth bill in like 20 movies.
Oh my god, she's in a lot of movies
and very talented, right? She was in The Groundlings. Yep. I mean, she's very funny, like, but she just doesn't get to shine that often as like the lead in films. So I'm glad that there's this one where she really gets to be on display. Though I still think of the two of them, Mira Sorvino is giving a better performance. No, a funnier performance. But like,
yeah, yeah. I agree. But it is really nice to see, like you said, her in a leading role, a true,
yeah, you know, for sure.
So it's a great movie. Great enough that it's probably going to go down, I think, is the only one that we both have on our list.
Oh, yeah. I promise you, my number one is not going to be on your list.
Oh, I just have a feeling where it could go. I have a feeling. Well, without further ado, I'll get to my number two, which, as I think you all who know Mike would know, he was going to pick Five Different Friends. It would also then be classic of me to pick four, because I got to double down on one. And I'm doubling down on my girl, Jennifer Aniston.
Ooh, okay.
I couldn't just pick one. And there was honestly three others that I considered for the other spot. Because again, got a lot of movies I like. But you know what? I went for the sentimental. I dug a little into my personality. I had to fucking do it. 2008's Marley and Me.
Oh boy. Okay.
Yep. I had to do it. I, you know, if you don't know what this is, at this point, now that we're 16 years out from it, crazily enough, I feel like it goes up towards the very top of classic dog movies. Would you disagree with me on that, regardless of your feelings on the movie?
I think our next draft is dog movies.
Wow.
We've got to explore this. We've really got to explore this further. It's definitely, like, in terms of, let's say, modern classics.
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
I'd say of modern classics, it's probably the most iconic.
Could be, yeah.
Anywho, it's Owen Wilson, Jennifer Aniston. You know, they're a couple. They get a dog, Marley. And the entire movie is essentially about one's life, you know, a couple's life, a person's life, growing and learning and going through the trials and tribulations of life with a dog. It's directed by David Frankel, who, you know, directed The Devil Wears Prada. He also, you know, he actually has some great TV credits too. He's, speaking of Aniston, he's directed a couple episodes of The Morning Show. He directed some Entourage. He directed some Band of Brothers. But anywho, he directs this. I like him. I always see his name thrown around because it's all shows I like. But man, I'm not going to fucking beat around the bush here. Sometimes it's hard almost to put this on like a list because it's an absolutely brutal movie to watch. It's, you know, if you're a dog lover and you think about the joys and the heartbreak that goes into owning a dog, I think you'll know what you're going to, you know, run through with this movie. But it's fucking brutal. I got to spoiler this. Mike, you think this is okay? I mean, the movie did come out 16 years ago.
Yeah. I think people know.
But, you know, towards the end of the film, you have to deal with, you know, what it's like. It's getting me choked up thinking about it. Because, you know, I've got a golden retriever, Norman. And, you know, as a dog owner, you dread that you may ever have to put your dog down. Or, you know, the day that they end up passing away. I don't know. Like, this movie might be one of the most brutal, like, that type of endings to a movie that I've ever seen. It's just, if you're someone that will get choked up, it's just, it's waterworks. It's fucking waterworks. Is it not?
Well, look, I have to tell you, I think most people know, I definitely prefer a darker movie.
Yes. I'm not thinking that it's going to be
without a happy ending. Happy endings make me want to vomit, and I prefer a darker ending for sure. Dude, I've never watched this movie. I'll never fucking watch this movie. Fuck off, dude. No, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. No.
It's putting yourself through pain.
I'm not doing it. Like, people made it to the cinema like a couple days before me, and then I found out what happened, and I was like, nah, I'm not doing it.
I was probably one of those people.
Yeah, dude. No, I'm not doing it.
I want you to know how much of a sick fuck I am. I went to this movie alone in theaters.
Are you okay?
I wasn't okay.
You recovered.
It's taken 16 years. I don't know if I'm recovered. I can I tell you something? I've never watched it again because I don't know if I can get through it, but I loved it.
I'd rather watch like Schindler's List. Like, fuck this, dude. I'm not doing it.
Oh my God.
I'm not going to do it.
It is hard, man, but it's just, it really is. I have to say, it is a really good movie. Like, it actually is. And I think the ratings actually reflect that pretty well. It's just, it is heartbreaking, but damn, is it a charming movie. And it is true to life with how it feels to be a dog owner and just how much you'll learn from them and how much you'll love them. And how much they become such a piece of your whole world. But fuck, man. I had to include it. I can't wait to talk about some other Aniston films in the honorables, but Marley and Me, number two.
No, I can't argue with it. I mean, most people said it was a good movie. I'm sure that it is. I'm sure it's, you know, sort of a well-earned place that it gets to. Obviously the cast is good. I just. If you ever hear that I've watched this movie, like, please do a wellness check. It means I'm not doing all right. There's something going on that's bad in my life. Like, I've resisted pressing play for 16 years, and I can't imagine the day that I press play on this movie.
You know what? You are doing, you are honestly, you're saving yourself. You're doing the right thing.
It's just not going to happen for me. All right. Well, I'll tell you what is going to happen for me. My number one movie is a movie I'd watch literally any day. I don't care. I'd watch it every day for the rest of time, and I would still be just as happy. It's the opposite of Scream. It's impossible for me to get sick of this movie or of this, slight hint coming, franchise.
Ooh. Okay.
You know, I don't think people necessarily would have expected this to make my list, let alone be number one. But
oh my God, I think if this is what I think.
If you didn't, then you clearly don't know me. I'm talking 1993's Leprechaun.
Oh my god!
Fuck yeah, Leprechaun, the theatrical movie debut of Jennifer Aniston. I think she was in like a TV movie, but let's just call it the film debut of Jennifer Aniston, breaking out as the character Tori Redding in Leprechaun.
Unreal.
I want to talk so much about all the Aniston movies, but let's just Leprechaun. You got your Jennifer Aniston. You've got your Warwick Davis, who everybody loves. Who doesn't love Warwick Davis? Incredible legend. You can't
not love him.
Harry Potter, fucking Star Wars. He maintains this Leprechaun role all the way throughout the series. Mark Jones may or may not have been inspired by Lucky Charms, depending on what you read. Wrote this movie. Later tried to create a Rumpelstiltskin movie that doesn't work. Gabe Bartalos did the makeup effects, still doing makeup effects to this day. A legend. And there's just so much to love about this movie. You know, it's 93. So this is like pre-slasher revival, right? Scream is slasher revival. That's 96.
Six, yeah.
And this is the lost period where people are like, what should we do? Maybe we should make a slasher about leprechauns. Go ahead, yeah.
Can I interject and just say, up the IMDb page, look at the outrageous poster of the leprechaun just peering through a door, and just at the top, your luck just ran out.
One of the all-time classic taglines of any film. You get Warwick Davis riding a tricycle. Did Saul rip that off? I'm not sure, but it's better than Leprechaun. What's his weakness? Shining shoes. If you keep throwing shoes at him, he's going to keep shining them, and you can run away. Yes, that's a plot of the movie. I don't understand how you could not like this. You get Jennifer Aniston. She's like, I don't know, 23 or something. She still has her old nose. So she hasn't had her nose job yet. I love that. That's hilarious. And in Friends, you know, anytime they go back and show old Rachel, she has like a prosthetic nose. Are they referencing Leprechaun? I don't know, but they're making fun of her nose job. And I think that's hilarious. Leprechaun franchise. Eventually you get to the point where Ice-T is in it. Leprechaun in the Hood. This is just a fantastic franchise. I don't understand why anybody would not like this movie. A leprechaun, some person in this movie eats something from the pot of gold. He eats a gold coin, and the leprechaun has no choice but to try to rip it out of him, or else he doesn't have all of his treasure. And then they throw him in a well, and then he comes back as a skeleton leprechaun, and they have to blow up the well, and it doesn't kill him. You can't kill a leprechaun, even with a four-leaf clover, which happens to grow in a gigantic patch outside of the exact farm that the leprechaun is at. Why is he at a farm in North Dakota? Don't worry. The owner was in fucking Ireland recently. Who's asking these questions? This movie fucking kicks ass. I would literally watch it any day. What a great film. Budget $1 million. Box office $8.6 million.
That's unreal. What a success.
That's effective filmmaking.
Yes. Your passion just now. I'm watching this tonight.
It's so good. If you watch it tonight and you don't love it, then my name is Rumpelstiltskin. I don't know what to tell you.
Oh my god, unreal endorsement. If you don't want to watch this movie after that, I don't know who you are.
Me either. You're probably watching Marley and Me, in which case clearly you don't know who I am and we're not friends.
just mic drop, pun intended. Let's fucking
Leprechaun. I love Leprechaun. I love the whole franchise.
Unreal. Your luck just ran out, guys. Holy shit. Until you watch Leprechaun. Oh wow, that just, I'm not even kidding, that was one of my favorite descriptions you've ever done on the pod.
Thank you. I'm glad. Wow. And I hope all of you go watch Leprechaun. I'm pretty sure it's on like Prime or something. There's no way you should have to pay to watch Leprechaun. Let's be honest, it's got to be on one of the streaming services.
But if you're really getting desperate and you just got to scratch that itch, just pay the $3.99. just don't worry about it.
I'll reimburse you. Hit me up. I don't care.
Okay, you heard it from Mike. We'll see if that's true. Holy shit, I seriously actually can't wait to give you my review once I've watched it.
I can't wait to hear from you.
I was just watching the trailer with sound off, and it looks phenomenal.
It's everything you could want and more. Does the leprechaun eventually get a go-kart and get pulled over by the police?
No.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
That is next level. Oh, my God.
Upgrades from tricycle.
Oh, wow. I just cannot wait. I cannot wait. I can't believe I've never seen it, honestly.
I would like to know what you think you're going to top my number one with at your number one.
Well, I'm not going to say I'm going to top it, because I don't think that can be topped. But I'm going to say we're going to bring it full circle and finish where we started.
Ooh.
And, you know, you call it fatigue, my friend.
Oh, no. Okay. All right.
But I will never tire of the first Scream.
Okay.
I mean, to me, that's the one movie on this entire list. Courtney Cox, of course, Gail Weathers. To me, that is my true classic from this entire list of movies that we had to pick from. That is up there on my Mount Rushmore of horror films. I absolutely fucking love it. I can watch it over and over, that one at least. Between, and we've talked about Scream on the podcast before, but maybe you haven't listened to all the episodes. Obviously, Wes Craven. We've got Neve Campbell, Courtney Cox, David Arquette as the main trio. Skeet Ulrich and my man Matthew Lillard as the fucking villains in this one. They play it so wonderfully. We've got that Drew Barrymore iconic opening scene. But, you know, we've got Jamie Kennedy, of course, in there as Randy. But this just sets the precedent for the entire series. I love the series. I do think they've got a couple things to work out if they want to make another one. And you didn't need to make one past four, perhaps. But I'm always down to go on the ride, check in with the characters again. And this one is just brilliant. You know, if there's one of them that's brilliant, it's this one. It just does it so well of slasher revival, being a true slasher, but also making fun of slashers, being kind of meta in that way. It's fucking great. And that's what I gotta say.
Okay. I do have to give you that Scream 1 is brilliant. It's important. It was a phenomenon. All of that is true. And it's certainly still the best one by a long, long shot. I don't know what else to say. Gail Weathers, all time classic film name. I mean, is there one better off the top of your head? I don't know. Maybe Frankie Figgs. But like Gail Weathers is just, yeah.
It's just,
you just love to see it. You just love to see it.
You love to see it. So you know what? Had to bring it back. Started with Scream 3, ended with Scream 1. Here we are. That's the top five. You want to recap our list real quick, Mike?
All right. I am number five, Scream 3. Number four, Big Nothing. Number three, The Whole Nine Yards. Number two, Romeo and Michelle's High School Reunion. And number one, Leprechaun.
And I am number five, Almost Heroes. Number four, Romeo and Michelle's High School Reunion. Number three, Just Go With It. Number two, Marley and Me. Number one, Scream. And number one. And fuck, man, we got to talk about a couple other movies.
Should we go like friend by friend quickly?
Yeah, let's go friend by friend. Let's start with our girl Jennifer Aniston.
All right. So I mean Office Space. Classic.
Oh my god, I know. Absolute classic. Yeah, I actually rewatched some of that this week. Dude, I'm a big fan of a lot of her movies. I know this is not one that people are as big on as me, but I am a lover of Office Christmas Party.
Which, oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I find that movie to be a ton of fun. She's not like the main. She's in it quite a bit, but she's not like, I would not call her one of like the two leads, so to say. I also really enjoy The Breakup
with her
and Vince Vaughn.
Kind of an underrated classic. I feel like people that saw that like within, let's say, the cinema, I think everybody that saw it like really likes that movie.
Totally. I mean, you've got Favreau into supporting, you've got Jason Bateman, and obviously Bateman and Jennifer Aniston are like best friends in real life, and Favreau and Vince Vaughn are best friends in real life. I mean,
Chicago movie.
Oh my god, Chicago movie. What's not
maybe
to
once
like?
A 12 Lemon Centerpiece.
Yeah. Come on.
John Michael Higgins. Oh yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. No, you're good. That one's really good. Like, I just want to give a shout out because back when I did briefly work in the film industry, I released this movie, and I do think it's actually one of Aniston's best acting roles, which was Cake. Have you ever seen Cake, Mike?
Mm-mm, I haven't.
So good movie came out at this point. I mean, it is fucking nuts, but at this point, about 10 years ago. But she plays like definitely a more nuanced role than she usually plays, where she essentially, it's kind of like a mental health film.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I'm not going to go like too deep into it, but it's pretty heavy, and she plays a heavy role, and it was one that she actually got Oscar consideration for. They were trying to run a little bit of a campaign for her, but she does a really good job in it. Cake. Dude, you know what I watched that I had never seen this week? Derailed, with her and Clive Owen. You ever seen that?
I have. That's it's all right. Yeah, anything that gets bad. Clive Owen on the pod. Well,
I'm with you. Even Along Came Polly, I hadn't seen in a long time. And Philip Seymour Hoffman's obviously in that. Ben Stiller, you know, had a little bit of fun with that. She's in Rockstar. It's, you know, she's there's a bunch of movies with Jennifer Aniston.
Dude, you know, I'm a pretty big fan of We're the Millers.
Yep. Oh my God, another fun movie. She
obviously is one of the sort of lead voices in Iron Giant.
Yep.
Kind of a little bit of a hidden gem that I think if people have forgotten, Bruce Almighty.
True. I kind of forgot about that.
Not a good film, but I would not skip an opportunity to talk about Jerry Butts, the bounty hunter.
Oh my God. And any Jerry Butts Huffs.
And I have to say that, like, I don't know. I don't really think Horrible Bosses is very good. But if there's anything that's good about it, it's Jennifer, like super horny Jennifer Aniston.
Yes.
Just like something she never does in any other film and cracks me up every time.
Totally agree. Yeah, totally. That's a movie to me that always should have been even funnier because the cast is great. But you're right. She, if anything's great about it, it's her.
Who's next? I'm good on Jennifer Aniston. Who's next on the list?
Let's talk Matthew Perry.
Okay.
I don't have much else for him.
The thing is that, like, he has several movies that haven't aged well, like Three to Tango, Getting In.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Serving he Sarah, okay. I don't know.
He said I've never seen it, to be completely honest, but I know he really liked the movie Fool's Rush In that he did with, is it Salma Hayek that he did it with?
Yeah, I think so. I've not seen it. And the other one I tried to track down that I haven't been able to is The Ron Clark Story. Working on that. TBD.
Oh my God. I haven't seen that either.
He's not easy to watch his films, Matthew Perry.
But that's Perry, you know, rest in peace. And, you know, someone that neither of us touched on because there's not much.
I mean,
our man Matt LeBlanc.
So here's the thing with Matt LeBlanc, right?
Who I love.
Do you like, what's it called? Ed? Is that the one with the monkey?
Oh my God.
Ed. Lost in Space is like probably his biggest movie. Not good.
Yep.
Not good. But now we already have like a second version of the Lost in Space show, right? So that movie's forgotten and not good. I would really like to see Reform Schoolgirl. I don't know what that means. It's somewhere on his IMDb. One person has seen it. I would like to see it. Okay. Really, his best role is the boyfriend in Charlie's Angels.
Yeah, and that's like kind of a small role.
Exactly, yeah. That's the problem.
100%. So it's just hard to fit him in. I love him. I mean, he's in contention for my favorite friend in the actual show.
Yeah, he just didn't do that much in films.
No. I guess who's next? Next we could talk Schwimmer, David Schwimmer.
Okay. Schwimmer. I mean,
oh, I got to give you the movie that I teased at the beginning that I was like, well, there's one movie that I kind of was like, oh shit, like I didn't realize that he was kind of a pretty big supporting role in this, 6 Days, Seven Nights with Anne Heche and Harrison Ford.
Okay. Neither is that a good movie, nor is he like very good in it.
I agree with both points, but I had to bring it up with that.
No, agreed. I don't know. Did you ever see The Pallbearer? It's what's that guy's name? Matt Reeves, like the who now is directing much bigger
does,
films.
Yeah, I didn't see it.
I don't know. He has this film, Dwayne Hopwood, where he's like an alcoholic, which is kind of all right. And, oh, dude, did you ever see The Iceman?
With Michael Shannon? dude, that's one of the few movies on the list that I want to watch, even though I didn't get around to it this past
week. So that movie's pretty good.
Okay.
But Schwimmer doesn't... He's a pretty small role. But when he's there, he has a gigantic mustache and a ponytail, and it's pretty fun. But, like, he's okay. not... He's no. No. But it's still pretty good. It's got Michael Shannon and Winona Ryder, a small Chris Evans. Yeah, you've got your Ross in there. And, oh, my God, there's one more, like, big actor in it. Oh, fucking Ray Liotta.
Oh, shit. Okay.
And Michael Shannon crushes. It's good. You should watch it. But yeah, it's not a David Schwimmer movie.
Fucking Michael Shannon. He always crushes. I got to track down Kissing a Fool, the Doug Allen directed, but
it's also there. I haven't seen it. It's up there.
That's got to be seen. But I'm trying to think. So who else? We still okay. Next we could do Courtney Cox. We'll end with Kudrow because she's got a few to shout out. But you know, I feel like with Courtney, you've got the Screams, you've got what she was in, what's it called?
Ace Ventura,
Pet Detective.
Longest Yard.
Yep, Longest Yard. And then I haven't seen it, but I was kind of intrigued. 3,000 Miles to Graceland.
No, I haven't seen it either. Yeah, I don't know about that. And I don't know if she's a big enough part, but
yeah, that's true.
I don't know. That's her thing also. Yeah. She's consistently doing TV since the mid-90s, right? Like, she just barely makes it out to do these roles.
Yep. Then we have Lisa Kudrow, who, like Aniston, has quite a long filmography, maybe a little shorter, but because she's in, like, for instance, I love the movie. I thought it was super underrated, Long Shot, with Seth Rogen and Charlize Theron.
The she's Analyzed, kind of a smaller role. This and that. Yeah, P.S. I Love You, she's, like, one of the friends.
Yep.
Easy A,
Neighbors, she's in.
Neighbors. Band Slam is like something, what is that, 10 years old now? The one thing I'd say where she's like a main role that I think is actually a really good film, people haven't really seen it, it's Clock Watchers.
Oh, yeah.
I was very, very close to having that replace Romy and Michelle, but she plays like an office worker, and her like gal pals are Toni Collette and Parker Posey and Alana Ubeck, and Jamie Kennedy's in it, and there's a Scream shout out. And it's like, yeah, it's just like, it's kind of like a, you know, a different take on, let's say, like Office Space. But that's like, that's quite good as well. And she's a main role.
I think I've watched it in the last few years, but my memory is just like, it rings such a bell. But that's, yeah, it's funny. It's like they do, some of them truly don't have much, but they didn't need much because they have friends and they are all going to. I mean, none of them ever needed to work another day in their lives if they didn't want to after Friends.
That is a fact. I feel like we need to somewhere down the line do like a Friends-focused episode. Not sure where to take that, but something.
Agreed. It's such a big piece of television that it feels like it would be wrong not to at some point. But we got to figure out how to frame it. If we're just doing best episodes or what.
What else? Should we do like a little roundup of what we've been seeing? Or?
I would love that. What's been latest on your list? What have you seen?
Pull up like a list here of what's come out. Oh, The Holdovers came out here this week.
Did you see it?
I did, and I really liked it. I think I was a little surprised when I saw like the sort of scores after that were even higher than mine. You know what? The best thing about The Holdovers is that it's a movie. Like, it's shot well. It looks authentic. Like, it's funny. It's paced very well. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a well-built movie by, like, a good director.
Well, and that's the thing. We don't get a lot of those.
No, exactly. So, like, that makes it seem like it's, like a total anomaly. But it's just, I mean, I think people are saying, like, I think a lot of the reviews are basically, this is now like a Christmas classic. And I think that gives it a bump, which is, you know, deserving.
I loved it. One of my favorites of the year. So I think it does get that bump because it is kind of an instant Christmas classic. So, and Giamatti is just what a wonderful actor he is.
Yeah, he really is.
But yeah, Holdovers. I'm trying to,
I saw Mean Girls. That was sad.
Oh, I don't think I can even do that. Is it as bad as I suspect? Because I think it's
not that it's
bad.
Like incompetent. It's just, yeah, it's really sad. Like, you probably shouldn't watch it.
No, I really didn't plan on it. Like, even if you told me it was good, I don't know if I would have seen it. Because I just, no. Nope.
Did you see Poor Things yet?
I did.
So here's what I want to say. Besides that, Poor Things is fucking awesome. Poor Things and Barbie are the same movie. Which one of those did you like more?
Poor Things.
Exactly. Poor Things is better than Barbie for basically being the same movie. And I feel like people aren't quite giving it the amount of credit that it deserves. Because that movie pretty much rocks.
Here's the thing with Barbie. Barbie was, you know, I mean, I think we both probably have friends that either maybe some loved it, maybe some really didn't like it. But I kind of fell somewhere in the middle where I thought it was very entertaining. I had a good time. But, and Mike, I'm assuming this is what you're getting at. Poor Things made all the same points, but just did it in a way that was so much more creative and interesting.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I really liked Barbie. I had a lot of fun getting into like the Barbenheimer like spirit of it all.
Oh my God. Yeah.
But, like, it's such a similar movie and it's just so much more creative and interesting that like you're like, oh shit. Well, that kind of fucked Barbie's day up, you know?
Totally. It's like Barbie is fun in the moment, like that first experience. It's really fun. It's funny. It's entertaining. But then you see something like Poor Things and you're like, oh shit, like that. And don't get me wrong, by the way, I'm not the biggest fan in general. I know Mike knows this, but yeah, I'm not true. The biggest. I don't want to mispronounce his name. Yorgos Lanthimos.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not the biggest fan of his films. I know that's like kind of an unpopular opinion. I know people love him.
No, that's true. You're consistent in that you don't love his movies.
Yeah. And it's funny because obviously Mike and I both, even when we have differing opinions, we both love the art of film. And he obviously, you know, Yorgos cares about that art and is trying to make something totally his own style. And I really respect that, but it hasn't connected with me much. But I have to say, Poor Things, of all his movies, I think it's my favorite. I think I enjoyed it the most because I felt that I enjoyed the wild nature of it all this time. I liked what he was, not only did I enjoy what he was saying, but I really enjoyed how he said it. And
it's wild, but it's effective, right? It's saying a lot of things, but it's also, it's not saying things in such a super obvious way that like you can sort of, you know, it leaves room for you to kind of think about it, what you want.
Well, it's a fucking movie. That's an interesting movie.
Exactly.
That gives you, again, that makes you think of the themes it's exploring. Whereas this is going to, it's delicate to talk about Barbie right now, especially coming from two guys who liked it. But it's like, you don't want to say something negative about it almost because like we both are two people that fully agree with the views that it's displaying. But it's like in a way that is meant to not minimize what they're saying in the film, Barbie just blatantly continues to tell you what it's saying.
Yeah.
Whereas Poor Things, if you're watching, Poor Things is just a movie that you are then saying, oh shit, like they're, so like these are the themes they're touching on with it.
And like, not to be like a pretentious douche, but I will briefly stop you to say that Poor Things is a film. It's not just a movie. It's a film.
Yes. It is true. It's like, it does sound douchey, but it is actually fucking true.
And I will say with Barbie that like, I feel like Greta deserved a nomination for director. That's a strange snub. Same. But both also said right after it that like, it feels bad to say, but like Margot Robbie gets kind of lost because Ken is so fucking good.
Totally.
So that doesn't surprise me. That
to me, the two best things about the movie, if we're talking just the pieces, were Greta and Ryan Gosling. Because Greta put together, I mean, what an achievement to put together that
exactly movie. Yeah, it's a strange snub for like what she was able to build out of a doll.
It is. I will say, like, just to give, I mean, not that I need to give the fucking, you know, the people voting on this shit is the other directors and the other actors, but not that I need to give them any credit. Obviously, the Oscars is a little bit different than some of these other award shows in that it is, the category can hold five nominees. And a lot of these other shows, because they're divvying things up into different categories, there's like 10 nominees at the end of the day. There were quite a few good directing, you know, performances this year, we'll call them. But it's like, I do think she would have been very deserving of being in that five, just because of the feat that putting together Barbie was, coupled with, and I rarely would say this for why someone should be nominated, but given that it was quite a feat to put it together, the fact that it was also so incredibly successful, I think maybe in this case should have been considered a little bit. And I don't know. It's just, yeah, she was great. I'm sorry to Margot fans. I think Margot's awesome. She was not, her performance was not better than any of the other wonderful actresses that were nominated. It just wasn't. Yeah.
And Barbie deserves awards for other, like, production design or costuming as well. But I will also say, once again, it felt like Poor Things was better. It was just like, I was totally happy with Barbie until I saw Poor Things. And then I was sort of like, oh no, this is just like a much, much better version of Barbie's all kind things of it was like, doing.
Yeah, Barbie's kind of the big budget, like blockbuster version.
Yeah.
Like fun version, but not necessarily Oscar version, you know?
Yeah.
Poor Things is the Oscar version of it.
Well, speaking of not exactly Oscars, though, like, I am very surprised to see that both Ryan Gosling and Mark Ruffalo are nominated for supporting actor in essentially just straight comedic roles.
Yeah, yeah. That's something we don't see a lot.
That is surprising. And as much as we were both immediately like, Ryan Gosling deserves an Oscar because he's that good, we also were, I immediately texted you, was like, how fucking good is Mark Ruffalo? Like,
yes.
I'm still laughing. Like, he's just cracked.
Oh my God, he was absurd. He was so good. Like, what an absurd role that he fully embraced.
Dude, he's so fucking funny. Oh my God.
And fucking Emma Stone was great too.
Well, the thing with Emma Stone, right, is you certainly, how can I say this? There's no other actor that's been asked to do as much as she was asked to do.
Yes. Oh my God.
So whether that makes her the best and she should win the awards, I don't know. But like, that's the facts, right?
Yeah.
She did more than anyone else could do.
100%. And
Poor Things.
What a film. Yeah. Very, very, very solid movie.
Wait, did you see The Beekeeper?
Not yet. Fuck. I sadly haven't seen the bad, like the ones that you are like telling me to see. I've been sidelined and I haven't gotten to see Beekeeper. I haven't gotten to see fucking Night Swim.
Oh yeah, Night Swim is a treat.
Oh, but I'm trying to think if what I have seen. I've seen quite a bit.
Oh, do you see Anyone But You? I feel like that would be up your alley.
Oh yes, I did. Yes, I did, with Sydney Sweeney and the other guy. Dude, you know what's so funny? The fucking marketing worked. I was convinced going in that Sydney Sweeney and what's his name again? Glenn Powell.
Powell.
That I thought they were together in real life and that she had like broken it off with her longtime like boyfriend or fiance. And it was like, no, that was essentially a marketing stunt. It was like, she's still with the fiance and all's good.
Yeah.
But I thought it was fun.
Yeah, I agreed. It was fun.
It was nothing special, but it was fun.
Once again, you and I will champion basically any rom-com that comes out. So,
100%.
Yeah, it was fun.
I think we got to wrap it up. And I'll be honest to all y'all out there, I got shit that I got to do today.
Let's go.
So,
go get your shit done.
Yeah, there's shit to get done. So it's been wonderful as always. Hopefully we'll see you guys sooner rather than later, as we always say. And it'll happen. It always does. But keep on keeping on. Talk to us about those Oscar noms. And we love you all. We'll see you soon. Peace the fuck out.
Top fives and deep dives. We're tired of PTM. Top fives and deep dives. We're tired of PTM. Top fives and deep dives. We're tired of PTM. Top fives and deep dives. We're tired of PTM.
My favorite director would have to be Martin Scorsese, followed by Quentin Tarantino.
That one's for the ladies.